Kelly's Heroes. Okay, so my next guest on Kelly's Heroes, he's a terrific actor. I've worked with him, I've seen it close up, the magic, and he's also a friend, a very good friend, and I'm going to give him a little call. So, where are you, my next guest?
Hello?
Hello, is that Mr. Sean Parks?
Yeah, who's this?
It's Noel Edmonds.
Noel Edmonds. I think I told you after last time, Noel, no high dives, no.
Now, do you know what, mate? I don't know what's going on with the signal here.
Right.
Maybe I should phone you on WhatsApp.
Hello?
Hello. Is that Sean Parks?
Yeah. Who's this?
It's Jiminy Cricket.
Jiminy. No, I told you after last time.
What
I can't
did you
help
tell
you.
Me? Why not?
I can't help you. Because you, I don't know, you got more legs than me. I don't know. What?
So, Sean, have you listened to any of these before? To these podcasts? Do you know
Craig,
how it goes?
Can I just say, you sent me like about eight. And yeah. I haven't listened to one of them.
That's
I'm so
brilliant.
Sorry.
No,
my
mate.
Brain,
okay,
I'm so hyperactive. I'm so hyperactive.
Listen, Sean, it's...
So many people send me things, and I do get round to it.
Yeah. No, it's good. Well, why I'm asking, because let me just explain what happens. Basically, we start the show off with a few questions from your kids, and then we end
Who's
the show...
Kids?
My kids. I've got two kids.
Oh, yeah.
Not just some random kids off the street.
No, I was
Although,
just about to say,
you know, that could be for series two.
That could be series two. Your kids could have run out of questions.
I doubt it. I doubt it very much.
Or they might care a bit less.
Yeah, just a little bit less. Yeah, so anyway, so we do the one, two, three questions. You know,
are they questions specific to me or questions
no.
about life?
They don't know
like
who
it.
The guest is. They have no idea
wicked.
Who the guest is. So, you know, sometimes they ask such sweet questions and, you know, it goes off into a tangent. And then we talk about life and your highlights of your career. And then we end with a song, all right? Your favourite song, but you're not going to tell me now. You're going to tell me later. You're going to hit me with your favourite song later, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Here you go.
Right. So, the first question I've got for you, Mr. Sean Parks.
Yeah.
What's your favourite flavour? That's from Vincent.
That's a very good question. Do you know what? I think orange.
Orange? I didn't expect that. Orange? What do you mean? An orange, as in an orange or orange juice or just orange?
All of it. Anything.
An orange sweet. Well, that's... I don't know why, but that wasn't necessarily...
Is that a flavour?
Orange, of course it is. Of course it's a flavour, yeah.
I mean, it's a thing and it's a flavour. It's a bunch of things, isn't it?
What's amazing about that, Sean, let me just jump right onto that one. Did you not do a quality... Well, it was a play. I don't think you did it as a play, or maybe you did do it as a play, but you certainly did it as a TV drama. Tell me about Blue Orange. That must be written in the stars,
wow.
Right? Come on, tell me about that.
Look at that. You're good. You're good, mate. I like it.
Come on, let's have a bit of Blue Orange.
Let's have a little. Yeah, I did. It's funny that you mentioned that, because funnily enough, my brother was talking about that the other day. Yep, Joe Penhall, Roger Michelle, because I've just been talking to someone about Roger Michelle.
Yeah.
An agent at ICM saw something I was in the other day.
Yeah.
And that Roger Michelle actually directed, which was this thing called The Lost Honor of Christopher Jeffries, which was a true story.
Yeah.
Joe Penhall wrote this play, Blue Orange, many years ago.
Yeah.
The thing about that production was, oh God, there's so many things about that production. Where do I start? We'll start with like the kind of like wow aspects, which was Andy Lincoln, Chiwetel, and Bill Nye.
Bill Nye, great cast, wow.
Yeah. Did it first at the National. And then we took over from them at the Duchess. And we did that for 6 months.
Wow, that's impressive.
Well, the thing about it, you'll realise why it's even more impressive, because people like your friend Jason Fleming and a bunch of others were on around the corner as well. But the long and the short of it was we did 3 weeks just kind of without a press night, right?
Wow.
In front of an audience.
Yeah.
just having a go, ironing out bits and bobs over those 3 weeks. And then we had the press night. Yeah. The press night was September 10th, 2001.
Oh, my God.
It was never as good as that again.
Wow.
And we did the 4 months.
Yeah.
Plus the 2 month extension. Because as we all know, September the 11th
yes,
came.
Of course.
And the whole of London scattered.
So was it empty theatres then? Was it not busy?
Mate, so many people shut down. It was crazy. My Fair Lady was on at the time.
But you didn't know.
So many people.
Why did you continue?
Well, don't ask me.
Were you getting houses? Were you getting houses?
Well, we were people around the curtain certain times at the beginning thinking, if there are two people in the audience, we're going home. Because, like, you know that old law
yes.
about, like, if there's less
yeah.
people in the audience than there are on stage, yes. you don't have to perform.
Yes, I've heard of that one.
Well, the problem is there's only three of us in the play, so there were always more people in the audience than there were on stage. That's gutting.
Oh, God.
Because it was a difficult play to do for many reasons.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's about, it's set shortly after a young man's been sectioned for varying reasons. The doctors are basically arguing over whether my character... the older doctor, who for my production was David Threlfall,
yeah,
and the younger doctor, who in my production was Neil Stuke,
yeah.
But yeah, they're basically these guys are arguing about whether my character is essentially borderline schizophrenic,
yeah,
or just black.
Ooh. Oh God!
Well, what does that mean?
Yeah.
So. What that does mean is that the younger doctor's going, mate, this guy's a nutcase. I'm not being funny, but yeah. he is, and yeah. he needs to stay in with us because he's going to do himself harm
yeah.
and others. And I can't, not on my watch.
Yeah.
So I think the guy should stay here. And the older doctor's saying, mate, you're just too stiff and white. I mean, they're both white doctors.
Right? Yeah.
And obviously, the character of Chris is black. So the older doctor's saying, mate, you're just too stiff and upper class and whatever else. You don't get it. You're listening to him and what he says, and you're not quite understanding it. So you're just saying, oh, you're crazy. He's crazy. That guy's crazy.
Yeah.
But maybe you just don't understand him because you don't understand how he talks. And maybe we need to listen to this dude with other ears.
Yeah.
So you need to put yourself to the side, shut up,
yeah.
listen to the dude, and maybe you will learn something. How about that?
Yeah.
And then the younger doctor's going, right, so you're crazy as well then, because I don't understand what you just said. I don't understand what he's saying. You're both crazy.
Yeah.
You both need to listen to what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And so so on and so forth.
And what,
2.5 hours. Yeah, go on.
And what happens, though? What's the message of the play?
There's so many things going on here, because in the midst of this, there's this black guy who quite obviously does have a problem.
Yeah.
Who was right in the middle of a debate. And then the question is, are both of them actually doing right by this patient, or are they arguing amongst themselves as a result of ego,
yeah,
which has got absolutely nothing to do with what this patient needs.
Yeah.
So you've got these three very strong arguments, my character, the older doctor, and the younger doctor, and seemingly no one is being heard. And the question is that kind of a fair representative of real life?
Okay.
Maybe is one of the questions posed yeah. by that play. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, it seems like a very relevant play for today, is it not?
To be honest with you, I only really like being in shows that represent what you've just said.
Yeah.
To be honest,
okay.
I kind of only really like being in those things,
yeah.
Because maybe we can learn something
yeah.
From them. To be fair, I happen to have been fortunate enough to have done a bunch of these things where, like, it's real life. And the thing with Joe Penhall as a writer is that guy doesn't mess around.
No, he's brilliant, isn't he?
Well, the point being is that I've worked with a bunch of writers, bless them, and you know what? Nice. But that guy does his research.
Yeah.
He really cares about his subject matter, and he really does his research, and he really does it from a psychological perspective, like a real mathematical, clinical kind of like, you have to understand all sides. You can't judge any side. You can't judge the younger doctor who might not know 100% of what he's talking about. But then you can't quite judge the older doctor because we understand that dude. But then also, should you really judge my character, actually? You know, because he's got his own problems, because the world is such that he's grown up on a planet in an environment that's not necessarily, he's a sensitive soul. Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, do we understand the sensitive soul from the mindset of someone who only thinks critically with their brain? You know, how can you have empathy when you can't feel? So anyway, the long and the short of it is yes, I think you're right. I think the play probably will always be relevant on this planet.
Okay. That's brilliant. But just before we go any further, Sean, I just want to ask you about your phone. So you're just holding it normally?
Yeah.
Have you got it to your neck or anything? It's a bit like, you know, when you have those calls where it's kind of moving about a bit and it's, I'm just picking something up. But I just don't want to do this interview and then think, oh, but actually when I played it back, I didn't hear what I'm hearing now. It's not.
How is it now?
It sounds good right now, but sometimes it's almost like you've got it under your shoulder and your chin. Do you know what I mean? It's
right, that I'll tell you what it is. I believe. I can't hold the phone to my ear. So every single time I've spoken to you on a phone, I've got some headphones on.
Okay.
Right?
So what have you got on now, then?
Same thing. So every time I've spoken to you I've spoken to you the way I'm speaking to you now.
Just on headphones.
But I think what's happening is those headphones are, because of the way I was set, is scratching my beard.
I think that's what it is, mate. I was trying to work it out.
So I've now sat in a different position and now I don't think it's scratching my beard.
I don't think so.
But listen,
it's good because we'll make this part of the interview, mate. Honestly, it'll be fine.
Is it going to sound like...
No, because
like it...
No, I love it because I thought I was going insane.
No.
Mate, we're cooking with gas, mate.
Got it.
It's not.
Got
no, it. Nothing to be gutted about. It's great, honestly.
Kelly's Heroes.
Sean, I'm just going to hit you with the next question. This is from Frida. Worm sandwich or slug smoothie? I'm going to hit you with that one.
Well, unfortunately for both of those, the worms and the slugs come out on top because I'm a vegetarian.
Yeah, but you've got to eat one. Those are the rules. You have to choose one. It's a nice try that you're a vegetarian. I love it.
It's the truth. It's the truth.
I know.
But go on.
If your life depended on it, would you eat a worm sandwich or a slug smoothie?
I'd die. So you get bread in that, yeah? You get bread in that with the worm, right?
Yes, you'd get bread.
You can't get away from the smoothie. You can't get away from the smoothie, can you?
I know what I prefer to eat.
I can scrape the worm out of the sandwich and you wouldn't even know, right?
Well, I suppose so if I turn my back, Sean, if that's the way you want to play this.
Oh, I'm sly. I'm from South East London, mate. You'd never know. So the worm sandwich.
Okay. Well, that's brilliant. Okay. And the third question. This is a classic Vinny. He's very keen to know. Oh, was that a beard scratch?
Oh, right. Okay.
That was the one.
I'm getting lazy.
We've got to the better. I am like, I am like Columbo, man. I'm about the right age now. You know, Columbo, when he used to go, just one more thing. One more thing. Hey, is your beard scratching? So I don't know what, I got to put one more thing. Just before I leave. Listen, Sean, mate. This is one of my faves. This is one that Vincent often wants to know. But I'm gonna ask it anyway because I think it's brilliant. If you were a superhero, which superhero would you be and why? That's from Vinny Volvo.
Well, it's got to be Superman, isn't it?
Nice. Okay. Straight for the.
Well, it's got to be Superman. It's got to be Superman.
Tell me why.
Or maybe I'd be Homelander, if anyone knows who that is.
Never heard of it.
Ooh.
Who's Homelander?
Some people will know.
Is that a superhero?
There's this series called The Boys.
Okay. Sounds interesting.
It's essentially the best superhero TV show I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah. What channel's that on for the listeners and for me?
It's on the Don't Tell No One channel.
The Shush Don't Tell. Can you do that again for me?
It's the Don't Tell No One channel.
That sounds like my kind of channel.
Well, it probably is, because it's the channel that you don't pay for, that you just it just comes to your TV or your computer.
Is this because you're from South East London, did you say?
I'm from South East London, mate.
Is this because you're from South East London that you know where don't tell no one TV?
I'm a hustler.
You are a hustler. But do you know when we met? I mean, I'm talking about when we first met and when recently re-engaged, you know, for the film Trick or Treat. But I think it takes one to know one, Sean. Do you know what I mean?
Do you know what, mate? I do think that's what life is. Is finally, when you realise who you are, you start to recognise your traits in other people. And then when you start to recognise your traits in other people, you automatically go, oh, yeah, I know you. And that's why all my friends are kind of very similar to me.
Yeah.
It's like, you know what I'm trying to say?
Oh, of course.
All my friends. I don't have many friends.
Laws of attraction and all that.
Laws of attraction. But I have to say, it's like I'm Aquarius, right?
Yeah.
I'll be talking to someone, whatever, what have you. It's all good. We're chatting about it, whatever. As soon as they go, yeah, because I was born in February. I'm like, are you Aquarius? They'll go, yeah. It doesn't matter. We'll hug each other.
Yeah,
we're brothers or sisters.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. I get you. It's all good. You don't have to explain yourself to me at all. That's how it is. So I think when I met you, I think like the words you use and the way in which you use them and what I use, and then we look at each other and we both nod.
Yeah.
Kind of, you know what I mean? It's one of them ones. Well, even though I think you were slightly more moodier. But yeah.
Moodier in what way? Come on, explain oneself. Go forth. Moody in what way?
You used to be quite moody.
What, do you mean back in the day, or do you mean on the film?
Like,
or do you mean in the film?
No, back in the
day. Oh, God, yeah, I was moody as
Well, like, no, you're like an angel or something now.
Oh,
whereas back in the day,
yeah.
Well, I mean, everyone was moodier. He's a naughty boy, yeah. Like all that North London lot were a bit John Sim and you know what I mean.
Oh,
was
I do.
Edgy moodiness right
now,
around.
Hold on, Sean. Now you've explained which decade, I'm completely with you, mate. I thought you meant man.
Oh, well, yeah, nice.
You know, when we worked together and I was a producer, I thought I was a right moody old.
No, no, no. Are you kidding? Are you kidding? No, no, not at all.
Well, listen, we are well and truly warmed up. I, for one, I'm sweating like John Leslie in Quicksand.
Uh-oh. Because
I am in what can only be described as a sauna right now. I'm in my airing cupboard, and because it's a hot day today, it's the only place I can do it and get a good sound. So
good sound,
there's
right.
sweat, yeah. you know, I'm losing a few pounds
gotcha.
Here, you know. But my listeners know that I sit on my 4-year-old's chair and I speak from my airing cupboard. So why don't we go to this point of when me and you were filming, it was amazing, right? Because I got this film together with Geraint. The whole idea of it was, the whole plan was, whoever I'd worked with, who was a mate or someone I rated, obviously the prerequisite was as good an actor as could possibly be, you know, who was my mate. And you just came to me and I thought you'd be amazing as the part of Clarence, and I didn't even know I could cast the film until I cast that film. It's kind of bizarre how your instinct as an actor, and especially if you're close to a project, how you can do these things. Anyway, you kindly said yeah. You know, you took a leap of faith and you were there, you turned up on set and you were brilliant and you were very professional. And then I came in and I'd been in the makeup And I'd said to the makeup that Trick or Treat was a working title and that we were probably going to change the film's name. And I said to you, I've got a great idea for a film. What do you think? And you said, what? Well, what is it? I said, 11-11. And you went, that's very interesting. I said, what do you mean? And then you said, go on. What did you say, Sean?
Well, I think you might have explained it a little bit more than that, like where you even got 11-11 from.
Okay, go on then. Let's go there then. Right? Let's go there. Yeah, go on.
Well, why
do.
Don't you explain your
okay. I think I'd mentioned to you, well, what had happened with the 11-11, in the process of getting the film made, I saw a shaman that I continue to see to this day. She's like a life coach, a shaman.
You see, you need to put this out there, mate.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
No, it's true,
so
true.
So go on.
In fact, I saw her yesterday and I'm buzzing, actually. I'm full of light and, you know, positivity. Mm. And I was doing a session before I started filming. Now, I'd stopped drinking for a year to get this film made under the guidance of this shaman called Susanna. It was a late session for some reason, and I got there about 9, and long story short, I told her about this film, and she'd read the script, and there's a bit in the film that I'd put in, which was 11-11, when my character sees the clock and it says 11-11, it all changes. There's a shift in the universe, and I, you know, I felt that was really important for this film, you know, to sprinkle it with that, you know, what does that mean? What does 11-11 mean? And I told her, and I said I wanted to change the title to 11-11, and she went, okay, great. And then we did a little journey where she does the tuning forks and the maracas, and she sings, and you sort of doze off a little bit, and you know, it's like a meditation. And then when I came round after it was finished, she said, oh my god, your film is blessed, it's blessed by the universe. I said, why, what are you talking about? She said, well, when you were half asleep there, I just got an urge to go and look at the clock, and when I looked at it, it said 11-11. And for me, as a shaman, that is a massive sign that you've got a blessed film. So I then came in to work about a week later, and I think I told you that story. And then you said, well, 11-11 is very important to me too.
I'll be clear. It's actually 1-11.
Oh, what's the difference between 1-11 and 11-11 then?
Well, the difference is from about the age of early 20s, yeah, I've been seeing 1-11 just like, I can't tell you how many times I see it. Literally, my mate Mel, Rado, he left a message today, a voice message, right?
Yeah.
Guess how long the message was?
That's brilliant.
1 minute and 11 seconds. I mean, I just see 1-11. And so, like, since my 30s, maybe early 40s, but late 30s, it's these days, it's now either 1-11 or 11-11.
Excellent.
The thing is, though, is that I'm not talking about I saw 1-11 once and then I saw 1-11 again 3 years later and then I saw 1-11. We are talking about, like, at least once a week for 25 years.
Well, that's amazing. I would like to know what that means. I'll find out for you, Sean, what 1-11 means as opposed to 11-11. Maybe it's a similar thing. But 11-11, when I told you, the next day, I'll never forget this, it sent the most shivers down my spine I think I've ever had. You know, it was like one of those moments, like, you know, almost when your kid's born. It was transcendental. It was like magic. It was a massive sign to me that this film was meant to be. And I said, Sean, you're right. And you had a smile on your face. You went, yeah, Craig, have you got an iPhone? I went, yeah.
Oh yeah.
And you said, have you seen your software update?
Yeah.
I was like, no, why? And you just went, have a look, mate. And I went, oh, okay. And I started getting a bit like tingly then, and then I looked at my software update and it was 11-11.
It was update 11-11.
What is that about? I'm getting
you
goosebumps now.
It's just undeniable. I mean, call it coincidence, I don't care what word anyone wants to put to it. We're talking about 1-11, significance of 11-11. You know, I've been seeing 11-11. You've been seeing 11-11, but it really for me started with 1-11. But I tell you, it's all the ones. It's the ones. That's the point. It's all the ones, right?
Yeah.
And then we've been talking about that for a week or something, and then all of a sudden, you know, because the iPhone obviously it tells you, right? It grabs you by the lapels and slaps you and says, mate, you're not doing nothing with this phone until you update.
I know. So, I know. It's crazy. So but what are the chances, though? If you think about how updates work, what yeah. are the chances of well, us doing a film with 11-11 as a relevance and yeah. on the first or second day of the shoot, it might have even been the first day.
Yeah, yeah. It was certainly not long. It was hours, like 48 hours after we'd had the conversation about 11-11 before that happened. So, yeah, I mean, and having been told that, oh, no, yeah, numbers are significant, mate, they are significant, you're left at the very least wondering what the hell that's all about, Alfie.
You certainly are. Well, listen, Sean, I can tell you what it's about. I mean, 11-11 is like a mirror of two worlds. It's this world and beyond. So it's like a matrix. And why it's significant is because it can be a time of change. It's good luck, but it's also like a mirror to. It's like a portal. It's magic. 11-11 is magic. Now, I'm no expert, so I wouldn't want to speak out of turn, but it's a very good thing. And what's interesting about it is when I've mentioned 11-11 to anybody, when I've passed on 11-11 to them, they get in touch with me at some point later and go, oh my God, something happened at 11-11. And oh my God, I keep seeing 11-11 now. It's like the 11-11 club is a beautiful club to be in.
But fortunately for me, you know, the way I work is, Craig, we had like a 2-3 hour conversation just out of the blue about 25 years ago. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that was great. I've always remembered that. Yeah. What, now that dude wants me to do a film? Yeah, sold. That's how my brain works. I tell you what happened was when you started talking about 11-11, it was like an exclamation mark on the end of my decision. Yes. You know, it was a confirmation of me doing this film, which I didn't. So, you know, but if I had any doubts again, which obviously I didn't, because I never have doubts about my instincts. Nope. But yeah, if I did, then that was a confirmation of like 11-11, 1-11. We're on this. It was like a no-brainer. We're in it, and so I'm happy. And the thing about it is I'm not even particularly like whatever. I wouldn't call myself spiritual or anything. The fact of the matter is, if everywhere you go, you keep seeing a number, and it's not like you set yourself up for it, where you put an alarm on at 11-11. So of course you're going to see that.
Yeah.
You know, if you just like, I swear to God, it's like I don't even have to do anything. As I said, my mate Mel today, you know, today. What was it? 3 hours ago, left a message.
Yeah.
It was 1 minute and 11 seconds long. It's like I can't, you cannot. What is that?
I don't know,
so
man.
Even
it's
though
something.
I don't know, and even 11-11. I mean, I sent you a text the other day.
You did.
And I took a snapshot of my phone, right?
You did,
which said 11-11. It was one of those moments where I knew I had to talk to you.
Yeah.
And then I saw an 11-11, and that directed my brain to you.
Yeah. Dean's in on it now. You're in on it. How was your experience on the film, by the way, briefly? How was your experience of Trick or Treat?
Well, I tell you, I don't care. I tell you what I'm fed up of being on film sets and TV sets where they don't really know, A, how to direct, B, actually how to treat a crew, and C, don't really care about the script, as it turns out.
Oh, Jesus.
So I'm fed up of being on those sets, right?
Have you been on those sets, really? Are they big sets?
Are you kidding me?
Are they big sets?
All sets, mate. Lots of sets, yeah. But more as the time has gone on.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not going to go there, but I am going to go there. I don't care.
Go on, then.
The way marketing's turned up and started running things on film sets, meaning people who aren't actually creative and don't actually have a creative bone in their body who are running things now, which is why we are watching a film or a TV show once, forgetting it because who cares kind of thing.
Yeah.
you know, well, you and I, mate, we grew up in the old school where people cared.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
So whenever I'm on a set where I know people care, I love it.
Yeah.
So that was a set where people care. Oh, you're definitely an actor first, so you understand how actors like to be treated.
Yep.
Totally. But you also understand how the crew likes to be treated. Yep. You care about the script. You care about the acting.
Yeah.
So it's not just about like what the camera's doing. And if you have to direct an actor, you know how to direct an actor.
Yeah.
And you know what to say, you know, even if you don't say very much because actually you're happy with what's going on.
Yeah.
The point being, you know how to talk to various people on the crew. Yes, I've definitely had a few of those in recent years where that quite obviously isn't the case. Yeah. So I had a lovely time. And then, as I say, it was just cemented in the idea of the 11-11. I can't tell you how much, even though I don't really know what I'm talking about with the 11-11 and 111, obviously I don't, but I can't tell you how much that actually, as I say, kind of cemented something in my mind. And you either get that, and I know you do, but you either get that or you don't, like the listener maybe who's listening to this.
Do you know the way I feel about it, Sean? Was I firmly believe you were absolutely supposed to be on that set, and you were supposed to bring your charisma and your warmth and your magic and your support to that set. I can't imagine that film, you know, without you. As simple as that. And thank you again for doing it, mate. And you were brilliant, and you are brilliant. And when you do see it, I'm not sure how you judge your own work, but it's not you. You're playing a character, Sean. You're playing that character brilliantly. I don't see Sean Parks when I see Clarence, and that's the biggest compliment that I can give you. Sean, I'm desperate to talk about Human Traffic, actually, because it appears to me that that was your breakthrough role. Is that right? Did that do wonders for your career?
On the film, yeah, publicly, you'd have to say that was the one that, as it turns out, it's the only one. Because as it turns out, again, you know, we talked about 30 minutes ago about liking to be in stuff that represents the real, right?
Yeah.
Well, Human Traffic represented my life at that time.
Why?
Because I was living it.
Well, you were doing the Raven, weren't you? Good for you. Okay.
I was doing the whole nine yards.
Nine yards, in fact,
you couldn't actually be in the film if you had no knowledge of it.
Yeah, well, that's fair enough.
The writer director. Yeah, but again, these days, you know, they might put someone in the film who doesn't know, but just because they're an A, they get in the film. Whereas that film was made from a perspective that says, I haven't got the time to teach you how to gurn. It's a low budget movie, and I don't have the time to teach you how to be on drugs.
I'm desperate to ask you, Sean. Can I just ask you? And it's okay.
Yeah.
You don't have to.
Yeah.
Was there any drugs taken on set?
Hello?
What? Can you hear me?
No. Sorry, I can't. You've gone. So ask it again.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you now. Yeah.
You don't have to answer this, and even if you're not happy, we'll take it out. Was there any drugs actually taken? Because it's very convincing acting in that film. There's a lot of good gurning going on. Okay, let's move on to the next question. I think you did some very good acting in that film. The gurning Oscar goes to Sean Parks and Jonathan Ronald Sim.
You know the thing about John in that film, and he's possibly forgotten and might not want to admit it, but what happened was I knew John. John's the dude who got me into Oasis.
Was he?
I was round at John Sims' house one time after a night, you know, after a night out, and he was like, "Listen to this."
Maybe I don't really want to know.
No. It was the Sean, come on, the first album.
Yeah.
Beautiful song.
Which one?
Slide away.
Give it all you can. Man today. Don't forget the words. A dream of you.
Exactly.
The one we are now. Oh my God. Mate, I don't know how Liam Gallagher does that. I've absolutely f***ed my throat.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But he played me that, and we were sat there, and you know how John used to be, and I believe still is, with his music, right?
Serious.
Don't mess around with John and his music. John loves his music. That's it. Fortunately, that's good, because so do I.
Yeah.
But and we sat there, and I was like, "Who's this?" So I knew John from before Human Traffic. One day, I rung him up, and I've gone, "John, yeah, you need to be in this film. Yeah, it's called Human Traffic.
Is that what it was?
Right. Okay. What is it?" I said, "It's Our Life." He said, "Is it?" I said, "Mate, it's Traffic, Our Life." He said, "Really?" I said, "Yeah, you better read it." He read it within like a day or two, because you know as well, John doesn't do any rubbish. John refuses to do anything that he doesn't want to do, and I respect him so much.
Because
many would do the things that they hate. Anyway, the long and the short of it is, so I said, yeah, he sent it. He said, "Right, who do I talk to then?" I said, "Oh, I'll get in touch with him. Don't worry about that. I think, the point is, the rest is history."
The rest is history. I was offered an audition for John's part for that film, and I read the script and I absolutely loved it. And unfortunately, I couldn't make the audition because I was filming. I was away filming. Yeah.
Because
I don't think I'd have beaten John to the part, to be fair, but it would have been nice to have been in the mix, because I might have ended up, doing a cameo or something.
Oh, mate, just to have been in a movie that represented my life.
Yes.
It kind of hasn't really happened before or since. There's things that's come close on other levels, to be fair. So fair enough.
So it's dear to your heart. It's a great film. It's a terrific film. And it's an important film for a lot of people.
Well, this is the why it's different to everything else I've done, which is because to this day, literally yesterday, walking the streets, and people who are of a certain age, of course. But actually, I say of a certain age. I've had 19-year-olds in the last couple of years coming up to me going, "Mate, are you that guy?" And I'm like, "No, I don't know that I am." "Yeah, it's you, isn't it?" And I'm thinking in my brain, I'm thinking, "No, I'm not Idris. I'm not Chewie. No, I'm not." "No, it's you, isn't it? It's you." And I'm like, "Who do you think I am?" "You're in the Human Traffic, right?" And I'm like, "Oh, yeah, okay, yeah, no, that is me."
Brilliant.
And young kids as well, like,
because there's still a lot of pills later to be had, and there's still a lot of raving to be done, right. Sean, I've got about 14 minutes for my kids come and basically kick the door down, which might work for a live podcast,
but
just before we go, before we sing our favourite song, I think it's very I'm very keen to I don't want to sing the song just yet, because I want to find out about your film with Steve McQueen, please. Your trailer looks fantastic, so tell me something about that film, please.
Well, about 10 11 12 years ago, young lady called Lenora Critchlow, who's an actress, we did a TV show together, along with a young man by the name of Danny Dyer.
Yes.
And it wasn't Human Traffic, it was after Human Traffic, like a good 10 years after Human Traffic or something. But anyway, we did something together. And she was telling me about her dad, this guy, Frank Critchlow, her dad, who was a bit of an activist in the 70s, 80s, definitely the 80s. And she was trying to do a story about him because he was a name back in the day, for varying reasons. One of the major reasons was because he had a West Indian restaurant in Notting Hill that many, many people over a certain age remember very fondly, because it ended up being essentially the headquarters of the Notting Hill Carnival for many years.
Amazing.
So, deeply entrenched in the community and stuff. And the long and the short of it is, she told me about kind of his story then. Well, cut to 10, 12, 15, however many years it is we met later, I've had to ring her up and say, "Lenora, so I'm going to be playing your dad?" Like, for real?
That's amazing.
On a TV thing, Now, she knew about it. She knew about it, obviously. And I think she might have been initially the person to set it off in a way, because obviously it's her dad and she had stories. And I think she might have written half a script or something. And to be honest with you, I don't want to speak out of turn. But I certainly know she knew about it and had something to do about it early. I don't quite know how Steve McQueen got on it.
It's a TV series. It's not a film.
So I'll tell you what it is. It's ever changing. But I'll tell you what it is. It's 6 episodes of something. Yeah. But those 6 episodes were different stories set around the 70s and 80s in London, right? Yeah. Different stories with completely different actors in.
Is Steve McQueen the director for all of this?
Now, he's the director and writer, I believe, but maybe not maybe he hasn't written more, for all six episodes, right? Brilliant. It's his series. Let's put it like that.
Yeah.
It's his series. Let's just say that. As it turns out, like episode three is a completely different episode. None of the actors in the first two episodes are in it. It's a completely different story. Episode four, the same, five and six, right? The first two episodes that kicks off the series, well, they're the same story, meaning they're essentially, they're a film cut in two. And the first week you were going to see the first episode and the second week you were going to see the second episode of that film. That story was going to be done and then we were going to move on to another story. Well, what they've done is they've put that together, those two episodes. Yeah. It's now a film. That film is now being entered into the Cannes Film Festival.
Oh, wow.
It's also being entered into the New York Film Festival.
Wow.
And essentially...
so you're in this film?
Yeah, it's the film. It's the thing about her dad, about Lenora's dad, you know? And and the point being, it's about essentially his story.
Have you seen it? Have you seen it in that format? Okay.
And I probably won't watch it because you know me.
Well, but you don't watch anything, do you?
I don't really watch anything I'm in. But I'll probably have to watch that because, as it turns out, without giving a lot of it away, a year ago, I was filming fake scenes of... walking down the street with placards in our hands, essentially saying, keep your hands off black people, right? Stop being violent and whatever else. Yeah. And please, can we not just like all just get on without you trying to kill us?
Yeah.
How about that?
How about that?
So we were filming the fake version of that.
That's
and then
incredible.
A year later,
yeah.
because that's essentially what the film is, it kind of centers around. A year later, I was in LA this year, filming, not filming at all, like being in a real march, in the LA march, the Black Lives Matter.
Black Lives Matter, yeah.
The long and the short of it is that we were filming like I was in the real thing in LA, about 3 months ago from now. And it was trippy because essentially... You know, that film that I've done with Stephen Queen, set in the 80s, was the 80s.
Yeah.
40 years later, I'm in the real thing, like tripping. Do you know what I mean?
It's trippy,
And essentially, my character, you know, he's been put upon by the police.
Yeah.
So what am I saying about this show? It's going to be... fairly controversial,
very powerful,
but it is a true story, which is brilliant.
So no one can't say nothing really,
because it's a true story. So you can have a go at it being a true story if you want.
Yeah.
But the long and the short of it is it is. So you know, it's going to be powerful. Hopefully, I hope my accent does it justice, because I've got to do a different accent in it. So that's the only thing I'm biting fingernails about. But
I'm sure it'd be great.
It represents the real. It represents another true story.
Sounds brilliant. I mean, are you proud of it? For you to, because you're a brilliant actor anyway, and then you're in the hands of a brilliant director with an important story to tell. So I really look forward to that, Sean. And let's just finish with your song choice, because I don't think there's anywhere else to go now. I think that'd be a nice thing now to sing a song. So what's your favourite song, Sean?
Well, I've got many favourite songs. You see, the thing about favourite songs is that I've got favourite songs for when I'm mad. I've got favourite songs for when I'm angry. I've got favourite songs for when I'm in love. I've got favourite songs for when I'm just woke up and the sun's shining and, you know, all of a sudden I want to sing, your love keeps lifting me, keeps on lifting me. That's my favourite song that day.
Higher.
You know what I mean? You know, that's like a scene in Ghostbusters. Well, the point being is that I haven't got one, but I'll tell you what my favourite song is today.
Yeah.
Of this week.
Go on then.
Is that one? I was watching something that led me to Lisa Marie Presley for some reason, which then led me to Elvis Presley, which then led me to There Must Be Lights Burning Brighter Somewhere. Got to be birds flying higher in the sky, more blue, if I can dream of a better land Will all my brothers understand? Tell me why. Oh, why? Oh, why can't my dream come true? There must be peace and understanding sometimes. Strong winds of promise. How's that go?
That will blow away. Thank you very much. That was absolutely brilliant. What a song choice. Pertinent to this times, relevant for these times. And actually, what a lovely catch up we've had. And beautiful, what a great old chat.
We always had good chats, though.
We always had good chats, mate.
And that's the actual thing.
Yeah, that is the actual thing.
As I said, I'll tell you what, for sure, the reason why you and I are talking today 100% is because of the chat that you and I had in the 90s, as you remember, wherever it was, in that bar
that stayed open until about 3 a.m.
And that's a fact, right?
Yeah, it is.
So there we are. Sorry about the song. Maybe the song is fantastic. I'll do a better version.
The song is fantastic. I'm telling you, there's a massive, massive smile on my face, mate. So much so. Listen, if you listen to any of these podcasts back, I always butt in, even with Terry Orla, I butted in and did my harmony. But no, I just let you sing. All right.
Thank you very much.
And I'm going to finish because I let you sing. You are going deeper
because we did a little thing. But yeah. I'm going to do this bit. While I can stand, while I can walk, while I can dream, while I can talk, please let my dream come true. There you go. Right, did it. Wicked. Laters. Do you think what? I'll talk to you in a bit.
I'll talk to you later, Sean. You're a legend, mate. Yeah, thank you so much, buddy.
Yeah, man.
Bye, man.
Not at all, mate. Bye. Bye.
Speak soon.
Next time on Kelly's Heroes. Join me as I delve through my phone book and speak to some fabulous people in the world of showbiz. Until then, stay happy.